That's a bunker? Way back in there. How far? Rich Trinidad asked. It's a hike, Collie informed him. Another click and a half. There were eye rolls at that, as well as a few tired sighs. The incline was difficult for the group. Their calves screamed. Sweat soaked their clothing. Halfway up, Gus's eyes started to wander toward the imposing mountainside and all the greenery growing off its face. He remembered reading an article about how the brain always sought patterns, faces, in inanimate objects. If Whitecap had a face, then its eyes were closed, and the mountain had puked upon itself, poisoned from within by something yet unknown. And they were marching up its filth-covered tongue, which was coated with a dried-up froth of corpses. The sight caused Gus to shiver.
You know something? Collie said. I thought I'd recognize more people.
Nope. Collie, Gus said. You think it's safe in here?
Fuck if I know.
That floored him, and it showed. The lower part of her face broke into a smile.
Having second thoughts?
Yeah, I am.
Honestly, I'm 99% certain it's safe, she admitted, which is pretty solid to me. I wouldn't be bringing us here if I thought we'd be at risk. And with all that's happened in the last couple of days, well, you can't hang around outside. Not in the open and not down there.
She jabbed a thumb at the mess behind her.
Don't worry, she said. You aren't going any further than the next checkpoint. I'll do the rest, by which I mean I'll check on the weapons and munitions.
And if all that's good,
we pack up what we can.
She locked eyes with him.
And if those assholes are tracking us, we get ready for a fight. Maybe even make a stand right here.
No sooner had the words left her mouth, Gus looked back the way they'd traveled, over the concrete battlefield, all the way back to the first military checkpoint. He stopped marching, which caused Collie to stop.
What? She asked.
Gus held up a hand, and the rest of the group halted.
Something up? Bruno asked.
Gus motioned for silence, which prompted the rest of them to turn around. Then, like a whisper teasing one's ear, he caught it again. The distant, unmistakable purr of a motor. A very big motor.
Well, shit, Gus muttered.
He turned to Collie.
You hear that?
Yeah, I think I do.
She waved at the rest of them. Best to hurry along, people. We might not have much time. The group started moving again, casting fearful looks in the direction of that first checkpoint. Gus hurried at his top speed, energized by the latest booster shot of fear. He wondered if his nerves were fraying out, or even his heart. They raced for the entrance, straining, panting, and eventually reached the cavern mouth. Collie aimed her rifle and peered through the scope. The tunnel was rounded, with smooth, chalky walls made of concrete. A collection of cables ran along the roof, resembling the veins of one's wrist. Two huge circular ceiling lamps hung high, perhaps 30 feet apart. Both were unlit, and if there were any more beyond, they were hidden in a deep, intimidating blackness where daylight failed to reach. A smaller security camera was perched before the first lamp and aimed at the cavern mouth. Collie immediately located a panel that at a glance might have held fire hoses. She smashed out the glass with the butt of her rifle and forcefully cleared the frame of any leftover shards. To Gus's surprise, there was a fire hose in there, as well as what appeared to be a breathing mask and a matching red fire extinguisher and axe. Collie pulled out three rechargeable flashlights, the kind recharged by squeezing the grip. She powered one up and flicked a switch, producing a white cone of light. She immediately handed the flashlight over to Gus.
Pass that and this one along, she ordered. You keep the last one and aim it over my shoulder. Everyone else get in a line. Hands on shoulders.
Gus did as he was told and powered up his own flashlight.
All ready? Collie asked.
Yeah. She started ahead, leading a frail string of humanity away from the light of day. The lead truck stopped at the first checkpoint, with the caged manhounds pressed against the bars and pawing at the air, so gripped they were by that infected sewage piss stain that tantalized their senses. If he ever had the chance to put a lab together, the vulture would have to sit down and analyze just what it was in the urine that attracted the creatures.
That scientific dalliance would have to wait, however, as the military structures ahead drew his eye. The rest of the leather pulled up around the main checkpoint building and jumped out of their vehicles. They entered the guardhouse and rooted around. The Vulture waited aboard his transport, studying the destroyed base that lay beyond the chain fences and concrete barriers. His eyes centered on the mountain in the distance. It was the crown jewel in a range of four smaller peaks, all stretching out behind the first mountain's mass. The first of a series of green and gray cones stamped against the sky. Trees and other vegetation grew out of the beast's back, all the way up, thinning out into a barren peak. He zeroed in on the mountain's upset mouth at the base. The caged mindless strained against their bonds. They weren't concerned about the nearby buildings. Where he was sitting, the Vulture could see that the hounds were aiming their noses straight ahead, towards the dark and mysterious opening at the base of the mountain. Then he spotted the Komatsu truck. The Vulture froze, his eyes narrowing in disbelief. The fortifications, the distinctly military dwellings, the trimmings of razor wire and strategically placed mailboxes that were surveillance cameras, the glittering broken glass and the unmistakable gleam of brass, and the reams of crushed vehicles and mobile homes. The end of the world location of it all, far and away from prying, protesting civilian eyes. The Vulture's driver noticed the tense posture of his leader and immediately wondered if he had anything to do with it. Without warning, the Vulture stuck his head out the passenger window. "Go!" he shouted at his lessers. The leather that had stormed the checkpoint stopped and listened, their upper bodies visible through the windows. Masked heads turned in his direction. "Go now," the Vulture pointed, infuriated by his minion's confusion. "There, to the mountain. They've found a bunker." 25. Rock dust coated the cavern floor, thick enough that Gus and company left a trail of footprints in their wake. As daylight receded and the dark enveloped them, the flashlights flickered to life. Gus swung his around, taking in the cement blocks that lined the walls and ceiling. "Keep that light pointed ahead," Collie warned him. "Sorry, got distracted." She didn't reply, and he vowed to do better. The beam bleached the tunnel floor, revealing concrete covered in dust and grit. They were well beyond the cavern's mouth, perhaps closing in on the 100-meter mark. Flashlight beams scanned the area, revealing featureless walls and nothing else. A soft breeze pushed past Gus's face, however, and he wondered if someone had left open a back door somewhere. Then there was the silence, a noticeable absence of any noise except for their own heavy breathing and the occasional scuffing against the floor. Some heels clicked, and the sounds carried long and far enough to cause Gus's unease to spike yet again. "Home sweet home," Collie whispered. "Look there." Ahead, the flashlight swept over a slanted pile of debris that buried the far left lane. Broken rock, jagged concrete slabs, plastic pipes, and girders filled half the tunnel. The mess was piled up at a steep angle to where the structure's integrity had failed. Gus lifted his light to better see the cross-section of pipework, both plastic and steel, as well as severed fiber optic cables. Wire dangled in strings and contrary clumps. The resulting dome of raw stone appeared all the colder and harsher in the white glare of the flashlight. "The hell caused that?" someone asked quietly. No one had an answer, and Collie kept moving. Gus angled his light ahead, but he looked back to the entrance and was surprised to see it half gone. "Did a bomb go off in here?" Sarah Burton asked. "Unknown," Collie admitted. "But definitely an explosion. Multiple explosions." "Any idea why?" "No," the operator said flatly. "But I imagine we'll find out." When Gus looked back again, the entrance was gone. The flashlights uncovered more destruction as they slunk over makeshift struts and broken sections of chain-link fence that might have once kept the walls and ceiling from collapsing. Dry decay wafted throughout, and the temperature rose noticeably. The debris filling the tunnel was much denser now. Rock fragments, fencing, destroyed machinery. Collie stopped so sharply that Gus bumped into her from behind.
Sorry, he whispered,
and he saw what had stopped her in her tracks. Bodies. Once undead bodies, as their heads had either been partially destroyed or blown off entirely. There was no mistaking the heap of blue-gray cadaver flesh and bone spread out across the floor. Some of the torsos had meaty holes punched through them, or bite marks the size of a shark's jaws, while the remaining musculature surrounding the wounds was dried out and sunken. Unseeing faces stared at the ceiling, while some ogled the living. A few of the dead were practically naked, which seemed odd, but others wore varying whitecap uniforms, military technician jumpers, lab coats, all of which was dried stiff with blood and viscera, glued to each other in a congealed tar that thankfully no longer had an odor. Someone dry-heaved near the back.
Watch your footing, Collie told them, drifting to the left.
Gus swung the light over to her and stopped when the beam centered on the dusty ass end of a backhoe. The engine of the great machine was turned into the wall, where a chunk of fallen rock and metal prevented it from going any further. The group stayed away from the machine, stepping in puddles of crooked, lifeless arms to avoid running into it. At times, dead fingers touched their ankles. They threaded their way past the backhoe, where a dead snake collection of chains connected it to what appeared to be the rear of an armored truck. The truck's back doors were pried open, and the interior bare. More corpses lay unmoving around the vehicle. Beyond that were slabs of debris stacked in a crude stairway. The slabs rose to a hole near the ceiling, perhaps half the size of a car lane. One body's legs were pinched off mid-thigh by a giant slab of concrete.
Holy shit, Sarah Burton released with morbid delight. Almost like the tunnel bit down on the guy.
Gus turned around to comment, but his voice caught in his throat when he spotted Monica shielding her eyes with the sleeve of Bruno's coat. None of this was new to him, but to a kid no more than 10, if that, the tunnel was the clingy stuff of nightmares. The screech of a speeding vehicle from behind distracted him.
The hell is that? Sarah Burton asked, peering into the dark.
That's trouble, Collie replied, and rushed up the stairway of concrete slabs. Gus fumbled after her. She stooped to clear the low ceiling and waved the others up and over. Bruno raced past with Monica, while Corey was right behind them.
Go, 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 Collie said. Gus, you take them ahead. I'm pretty sure the way's clear. The meat bags had to come from somewhere.
I'm staying here with you.
Collie fixed him with a look. She was about to say something when the white glare of headlights filled the tunnel. Collie pulled Gus down behind the rubble. She hefted her rifle and positioned it on a high point amongst chunks of debris. Gus pulled his Glock out and aimed at the approaching vehicles.
Sarah, Collie called out.
Yeah.
Take everyone ahead. We'll cover you here. Slow them down. Give you time to reach the bunker's second checkpoint. We call it the box.
What about you two?
Collie turned away from her rifle.
We'll be along, so get going. You got a click to go. Get to the box. Past that is a garage. Huge area where the bunker's vehicles are parked. Find the EV section. Those are the electric cars. Get one and get back here. Pick us up. We'll be on the move by then. Probably being chased.
And if you aren't on the move? She asked.
Then you lock down the box and you're on your own. Go down to level 5. Look for a small storeroom filled with dry foods. There's a door with EVR stamped on it. Crack that open and go.
Go, she asked.
Go where?
Out, Collie said. It'll take you under the mountain. After that, Bruno knows the way home.
With that, she took up a shooter's position behind the rubble, facing the advancing motorcade. Bruno and Corey hesitated, along with one or two of the islanders. Sarah Burton was already hoofing it into the dark. Gus shooed Bruno away. And once they started moving, he watched their beams of light flicker about for a few seconds.
Switch off that flashlight, Collie said, adjusting her rifle with a metallic click.
Gus did so, hunkering down not 2 feet away from the operator. The opening at the top of the rubble heap was about 6 feet across, with shards and jagged edges on either side. Gus and Collie had good cover, with clear sight of the tunnel. The approaching headlights grew stronger. Okay, she said quietly, cheek pressed against her weapon. Get ready, because we're going to stop a shit tsunami.
Some 50 meters ahead, the advancing vehicles slowed to a halt. Brakes squealed. Headlights fully revealed the extent of the cave-in, as well as that gruesome welcome mat of decomposing bodies, the abandoned backhoe, and the armored truck. Multiple vehicles filled the tunnel, the glare as fierce as magnified starlight. The tunnel debris and the piles of the dead prevented them from coming any closer.
This is good, Gus said, taking a deep breath. Real good. We can hold them off for days.
Collie smiled, her eye pressed to the assault rifle scope.
How long do we stay, exactly? Gus asked.
As long as it takes.
Just then, the unmistakable sound of doors opening perked their ears, followed by boots pounding upon concrete.
Get ready, she said quietly, fingers flexing on the rifle.
In the tunnel beyond, dark things swarmed. The tunnel had narrowed into just a single lane, filled with all manner of morbid surprises. While the entrance into the mountain had accommodated their forces, the vulture soon realized the only way forward would be on foot. Before entering, the mindless's handlers had released them from their cages and tied them to the lead truck's front bumper. Tires slowly rolled forward over fallen pebbles, rocks, and wire fencing until the truck, guided along by the pack of manhounds, halted. That caused a ripple effect down the line. A lesser jumped out of the passenger side and waved at those behind, motioning for them to back up a few meters. Rigs reversed, and they spread themselves out. When they all came to a stop, an impatient vulture opened his door, got out, and sucked in the exhaust-laden air. He tripped on a small section of fallen pipe. He regained his balance and scowled at the sight before him. A backhoe, apparently reversed into the wall in a hasty retreat, blocking much of their path. The dead things covering the road no doubt had a hand in that, or so the vulture assumed. Rubble buried two of the three lanes, slimming the passage ahead into a tight bottleneck. The vulture eyed the dormant ogre of industrial might. Like the enormous Komatsu truck outside, which the vulture dearly wanted to investigate closer as well, the backhoe could be salvaged, repaired if necessary, and later utilized. After they had captured the remainder of Carson's Islanders. And the girl. Especially the girl. The vulture raised a hand and signaled his minions to check on the condition of the machine. Engines idled as doors opened and figures emerged, leather-clad wraiths holding a positively medieval assortment of weapons. They hurried past the vulture, converging upon the bulk of the backhoe. The quickest one climbed the short ladder to the operator's cab and examined the controls with interest. The vulture waited. In the glare of headlights, the minion gave a thumbs up. A second minion relayed to the vulture that the machinery was all intact. It just needed a new battery and more fuel, both of which the leather possessed. Without warning, the first minion's shoulder exploded in a single crack of gunfire, and the man fell onto his companions at the base of the backhoe. Panic ripped through them. The vulture instinctively crouched behind his door before rushing to the rear of the pickup. Another shot then, and a second leather bounced off the steel hide of the backhoe, a bloody gout erupting from his ruined chest. A third leather had his head snapped back before dropping, long dead before the echo of the shot petered out. The others bolted for cover, crawling under the backhoe itself or sprinting for the trucks. More gunfire, single shots, each within a second of the last. A black-clad minion flew backwards as if yanked from behind, landing among the corpses covering the blacktop. Another figure twirled about, his hands going to his fountaining throat. He died slower than the others, falling to his knees before lowering himself onto a thin mattress of decomposing bodies. Bullets ripped into the front of a nearby truck, and the headlights winked out. The leather scrambled over themselves as they sought protective cover. Cries of warning reverberated throughout the cavern, guttural messages and grunts. Once the lessers were clear, the crossbowmen dropped to their knees and returned fire. Steelhead bolts flew straight into the tunnel, their fletchings slicing the air. The missiles cracked off rock and metal, while a few disappeared through the opening at the top of a mound of fallen rock and concrete.
The vulture studied that gap, where jagged teeth rose on either side. He thought he saw movement there. Scowling behind his mask, the vulture marshaled his minions. Kali fired, selectively, repeatedly, and each flash of her muzzle drove Gus to the ground and kept him there. He gripped his Glock, holding it two-handed as hard edges poked and prodded him. Kali fired twice more before dropping back. Truck headlights seeped through some of the more porous parts of the debris they crouched behind.
"Get 'em all?" Gus asked.
"You're funny," she said, and considered her weapon. "Got about 20 rounds left. After that, sidearm.
And when that runs out?"
"I'll take yours. Not like you're using it."
Gus scowled at that.
A series of cracks and whistles rang out above them, and flashing slivers split the air overhead, whizzing into the darkness beyond.
"Crossbows," Kali whispered. "Primitive sons of bitches. We'll hold them here."
She edged back towards a V formation in the ruins.
"As long as we can. Long enough for everyone to make it to the box. Then we run."
Gus's scowl deepened.
"That's it, honey," she said. "We run. It's nothing but a straight line from here. And if Bruno or Corey can't get an EV to start, or the damn things are all fried or God knows what, then you and I, my friend, are on the royal cusp of being FUBAR."
He didn't like the sound of that either.
"Nervous?" she asked.
"A little."
"Not a lot?"
"Yeah, okay, a lot."
"Never been in a gunfight before?"
"Well, sure, lots of times," he wavered.
"But," she prodded,
"I was usually drunk. We're usually shooting gimps. They're different. Usually."
Kali peered over the ridge.
"Being modest, I've seen you in action." A roar of engines drew her back to the battlefield.
"Oh my," she whispered, peeking at what lay ahead.
Under the direction of the vulture, the leather mobilized for war. Once they loosed their bolts, the shooters took cover and reloaded. During their early scavenging years, the leather made use of whatever they could find on the battlefields where the dead and the living had squared off. Kevlar vests, riot helmets, armor-plated knuckles. These bits and pieces of armor they pulled onto themselves. Then came the weapons. Fire axes, spiked bats, lengths of steel pipe, long knives, crossbows, makeshift spears. Some carried honest-to-God broadswords strapped to waists. Others hefted chains that could be whipped about. Shields hung off arms. Huge metal barriers with extra handles bolted on the inner part. They weren't super soldiers with high-tech weaponry. They didn't belong to any particular law enforcement body with formal training. What the leather had, however, was experience, earned during those early years as modern-day hunters and gatherers. They were conquerors of the aftermath, possessing two key attributes that made them both deadly and frightening at the same time. One was their singular hive mentality. The other was their willingness to inflict pain upon others. Amongst the flurry of getting battle ready, the bronze moved among the lesser like a grim sergeant at arms. The tall scarecrow inspected the minions, and when they were ready, he signaled the vulture. The vulture chopped at the air, and the first truck reversed in a huff of steam. Its headlights had been destroyed, but that wasn't the reason for its retreat. The vehicle halted alongside a second pickup carrying a barrier of sorts. There, the vulture brooded behind a box bed, watching the mound from which the gunfire originated. Headlights from some of the other vehicles still shone ahead, whitening the debris and casting bizarre shadows. The vulture suspected that whoever was firing from behind that concrete hump was alone, and that the shooter was buying time for Carson's Islanders to retreat somewhere safe. The vulture would not allow that to happen. 26. The shouting of perhaps 100 voices blasted past Gus and Kali. Kali rose to one knee and targeted a wall of shields charging around an armored pickup truck. She aimed at the shield closest to the backhoe. Three quick shots punched into its flat surface, twisting the owner to one side, enough to present a target. Except before she could get off a kill shot, the crossbow crew snapped off an answering wave of bolts. Two sliced past her head, missing her by a sliver as she dropped behind cover.
"They're coming," Kali said, keeping her head below the crest.
Gus lifted his Glock. He straightened and fired at the first thing he saw. His shots slammed into metal, but failed to slow the human train charging them. The masked freaks stomped over the grim welcome mat of corpses, reached the slope, and chugged up the concrete steps. The edge of the shield came down hard on the top slab, spraying dust and chips. But then the shield lifted, whereupon Collie blew out the owner's feet. Standing below the shield's rim, she had no trouble placing two quick shots into those boots. The shield carrier dropped to his knees, his scream rising above that collective howl. Two others floundered behind him, creating long shadows upon the wall. The train's forward momentum frazzled, but not before one of them flung a spear at Collie's head, missing her by inches. Gus shot the masked men from the other side, catching them in the chest and shoulders. The impact flung them back, twisted them around, and blasted them back into the others. The first man tumbled past Gus and Collie with a clatter as if he were holding on to a refrigerator door. He landed face down, and the operator quickly put a bullet into the base of the guy's neck. Gus continued firing, hammering that stalled mass of arms and weapons. They were so close, so packed together, he couldn't miss. Damn thing was, they just didn't seem to be dying. A second shield pushed its way into sight, channeled by another stream of masked men, bent over and screaming like a murderous rugby scrum. They lumbered past the first line of assailants and pushed up the hill. Gus fired twice, his shots hitting low and tipping a shield forward, enough that the edge caught on another's body. Two figures behind the shield fell, leaving the men behind them unprotected as they went down. Gus unloaded his Glock, catching one in the helmet and knocking him flat. Collie also fired into the besiegers, further disrupting the charge. She then dropped back, flinging the rifle away before pulling out her Sig Sauer. Gus tried to maintain his cover while still shooting, the flashes of gunfire lighting up the attackers' masks. One blast burst apart a neck, and the man flopped to the ground. But that was just one lucky shot. Gus continued shooting. He hit torsos, shoulders, even twanged around off a helmet. Collie joined in from the other side, catching fallen attackers from an angle. Men screamed. Some of those on the ground tried crawling out of harm's way. One fell against the front of the armored truck just below Collie's perch and crawled underneath the front bumper. Gus directed his fire at the masked figures between the trucks, driving them to the ground. Then his gun clicked empty, and a crossbow bolt buzzed by, almost shaving him to the jawbone. That near connection startled the shit out of him, and he dropped behind the mound. Across the way, with a man face down and dead between them, was Collie with her handgun. She cocked her head at him in a how-about-that-shit kind of way. They stayed there for seconds, waiting for more. When none came, Collie reached out and patted down the back of the nearby corpse. The screaming on the other side had died away into pain-stricken moans. "Wearing a vest," Collie muttered, studying the body between them. "That's not fair."
"I think they were all wearing something."
Collie glanced toward the tunnel behind them.
"Think they're there yet?" Gus asked.
She shook her head. She then peeked over the top of the rubble and dropped back.
"Looks like they're licking each other's asses."
A bolt sizzled overhead, bouncing off a wall before hitting pavement. Engines revved to life then, and the smell of exhaust singed Gus's nostrils.
"Letting us know they're still there," she said.
"You think they'll charge again?"
"Oh yeah."
Gus sighed and reloaded. He then peeked out through the rocks and sized up the armada. The tunnel was alive with trucks and masked characters keeping low between them. Collie rose just enough to clear her gun and let off three rounds. A headlight exploded in a short frazzle of sparks, and the light dousing them dimmed. She rose and blew out other headlights before dropping back.
"Letting them know we're still here," she said.
"How long do we keep this up?"
"Until we see lights that-a-way," she said, pointing at the tunnel behind them.
Gus rubbed the sweat off his brow, examined his hand, and wiped it on his pants. He looked into the tunnel. The sight of that immeasurable void sucked the confidence out of him. They returned their attention to the army before them. Minutes passed. A heavy, frantic panting growing louder whipped his head around. Three masked figures rushed up the slope, their bared teeth flashing, their hands ending in what appeared to be bowling balls. Collie half rose, gun blazing, and took the head off the first zombie in a flash of tracer fire and disintegrating teeth. There was a scramble then.
Gus shot the second and third attacker in pure fright-fueled reflex. The second gimp landed flat on its chest, its arms splayed as if sliding across home plate. Collie straightened her arm and shot the thing point-blank in the ear, the blast bursting rotten brain matter through the other side. In that split section of execution, the third zombie leaped past them both, and Gus tracked it with his Glock, unloading rounds before the mindless crashed into the lower end of the slope behind them. Collie emptied her magazine into the mob following the three zombies. She hit several masked men, driving the rest to cover. She dropped behind the mound and quickly reloaded, peering back every so often. Something caught her eye. A single figure stood alongside a parked pickup truck. In the shards of light and shadow from the remaining headlights, the bastard had his arm cocked back, holding what looked like a bouncing condom, its tip filled with about 8 ounces of God only knew what. Collie knew what it was. She rose high enough to clear the crest and put a bullet through that evil bladder, bursting it in an instant. The piece of shit holding the balloon recoiled as if he'd had his hand lopped off, and then quickly dove for cover. Collie did the same, not wanting to catch a crossbow bolt. "Yeah," she muttered. "You rethink that one." "The fuck was that?" "Nothing," she replied. "They were trying to distract us, gonna throw another piss bag at us." "But we just shot their Mohs." "I got a feeling they have more." From the other side, men and women yelled out while machines revved once again. "Fuck," Gus let out in disgust. "These guys got nothing better to do than to wear Halloween shit and piss in baggies." The last exchange flustered the vulture. The shooter was good. Too good, as evident not only by the routing of the two charges, but one well-placed shot that destroyed a bladder. He'd lost three of his mindless and several lessers, including most of his meat puppets. That pissed the vulture off. Nearby, the leather sloshed water over the pavement where the bladder had landed, diluting it so that the mindless would go for the freshest, the purest scent. The individual who'd been splashed, stripped, and set fire to his garments. The vulture ignored all that, focusing on the shooters ahead. There were at least two just beyond that pile of rubble, and he suspected one was the same shooter they'd encountered back at the island. The shooter had a rifle, a military rifle, and there was at least one handgun as well. He didn't know how much ammunition they had left, but apparently they had quite a bit. The vulture only had one such weapon, but no one to properly use it. That thought stopped him. "Bring me the new meat," he said to a nearby leather. "The one who called himself Top Gun." 27. The remaining headlights winked out. Behind the rubble, the tunnel was black once again. "Eyes open," Collie whispered.
"Not so worried about them anymore," Gus whispered back.
"Yeah, why's that?" For several seconds, he studied the last zombie he shot, sizing up the corpse not a step away from his feet. "You gonna let me know what's on your mind or what?" Collie asked, distracted by his silence. Gus shook his head, yet clearly bothered by something.
"Well, I thought they were zombies."
"They are zombies."
"Not so sure they are."
"The fuck you mean you're not so sure? I'm sure. Killed two of them myself."
"You sure you shot a couple of undead?"
"Hell yeah, I'm sure. There and there."
She pointed with her sidearm, indicating the recent kills.
"Yeah, well, I'm not so sure that one there was a zombie."
"Why?"
Collie demanded. Gus took a breath.
"I didn't shoot the head."
That got her attention. She immediately inspected the dead thing captivating Gus's attention.
"You sure?" she asked.
"Yeah, I'm sure."
That got her thinking.
"Watch them. And give me your flashlight."
He handed it over.
"They doing anything out there?"
Collie asked.
"They're just keeping low. One of them tossed some water over the piss bag you blew out. Saw some heads peeking out around the trucks. Couple of them with crossbows."
"They're putting water on the piss splashes?"
"Something anyway," Gus said. "And I smell something burning."
That gave Collie pause for a moment.
"I'd give my right nut to have one of those grenades right now," she muttered. "One of them lobbed underneath a gas tank would be a sunny day in northern Ontario, I shit you not. Now look here."
Staying low,
She edged toward the unmoving corpse, aiming her SIG at its head all the while. Grimacing, she reached out and rolled the skull one way, then the other.
"Wearing a mask," she muttered.
She angled the flashlight downward so that their attackers would not detect it.
"Switching on."
A fist-sized point of light appeared on the ground, near one of the fallen deadheads. Scowling, Kali reached down and grabbed its leather mask. She lifted it and twisted it by the chin.
"Anything?" Gus asked.
Kali shook her head.
"Not a goddamn scratch. You hit it in the chest there. No problem seeing those blasts. 2 holes.
"I got off about 4 shots, Gus said.
"Yeah, well, you hit it twice, and no headshot."
She dropped that meatball with a thump.
"So they slipped in a live one," she reasoned.
"Slipped in a live one? You listening to yourself?"
"I am, and maybe you should be.
If he was alive, he was crazy.
Plenty of those around."
Gus scratched at his beard.
"That means the other ones were alive."
Kali scowled again.
"That's not right."
"A headshot will kill the living as well as the dead," Gus pointed out. "All I'm saying, that one there clearly died from 2 shots to the chest, not a headshot, so that means he was alive. The other ones had to be alive too, right? Because I don't think the dead would work with a living one. I mean, look at the blood, for Christ's sake."
Kali's scowl deepened. Then after a thoughtful few seconds,
"Check on those fuckheads out there."
Gus did, ensuring that the little horde of crazies wasn't sneaking up on them. While he did, Kali removed the mask from the dead man's head. She hissed in distaste while she worked. The unmasked head reeked, as if someone had personally shat a hot party streamer inside the mask before pulling it over the thing's face.
"Oh, dear Jesus," Kali said.
"That thing stinks," Gus agreed.
"No, well, yeah, that, but... oh, goddamn."
Gus waited. She gripped the head and twisted it violently, pulling it so that Gus could see. She hunched down, and using the mask as a cloth, gripped the unsettling swamp grass that was the thing's hair. As she lifted the head further off the ground, the nearby light illuminated its face. Gus didn't say a word. He'd seen more than enough dead people to recognize the one Kali had a grip on was indeed a genuine Mo. A man with black sunken eyes, of which only one was present. The other was merely an oversized cigarette burn of a cavity. There were holes in both its cheeks, as if the things had accidentally, or intentionally, chewed through the meat there. The skin color was a pale blue, even under the flashlight's glare. But then he noticed it, and what he saw drew him closer.
"What?" Kali said, also studying the face.
"Around the mouth," Gus pointed out. "Those black things that are usually there. Like barnacles."
Kali got in closer.
"There are none."
They shared a look, then one of mutual shell shock where the implications didn't quite sink in.
"Check the others," Gus said.
A headache was hammering nails into his brain, a result of being stressed, tired, and confused. Behind the pickups and beyond, the masked crazies were watching and making their own plans. He just wasn't sure what.
"Look at this," Kali said.
"Holy shit," he whispered.
28. "Gah!" Top Gun spat. Threads of fat silk stretched from his lips as the ball gag was removed. He wiped his face and breathed unobstructed through his mouth for a change.
"Christ, those things taste like dead dog balls. Not that I know what dead dog balls taste."
One of the 4 leathers surrounding Top Gun slapped him across his face. Top Gun took it, took the hint, and shut up. The bronze was one of the foursome that hauled his ass to the forefront, and the bronze had a hammer hanging off his waist. Top Gun was on his knees and didn't look up, because the bronze's hammer was right there at eye level. He hadn't seen the bronze use the tool, but he had heard the tall executioner use it, repeatedly, on one poor bastard. Trucks began pulling back toward the entrance to the tunnel, where it broadened into 3 lanes. Top Gun watched with casual curiosity until a dark figure appeared before him,
Top Gun raised his gaze toward the fabricated face of the vulture.
"You," the vulture said. "You can shoot a rifle."
Even though he'd been a slave to the leather for only a couple of days, Top Gun had learned quickly not to keep any of them waiting, especially the vulture.
"I can," he answered after only a second's hesitation.
The vulture snapped his fingers and a lesser appeared holding Top Gun's sinister AUG-20. Top Gun blinked at the weapon. Nearby, the bronze extracted his hammer with slow, deliberate care. He hefted it very close to Top Gun's bruised cheek.
"I want you to shoot some people," the vulture instructed, "from a distance. They are preventing us from advancing into this tunnel. Do you understand?"
Top Gun didn't ask why the leather couldn't find one of their own to fire the weapon. Instead, he swallowed and said,
"I understand."
Another leather held out a small ammo case. Top Gun knew it well.
"Kill them," the vulture said.
There was no promise of better treatment, no words of being kept alive. But on some unspoken signal, the leather surrounding him seemed to edge closer, their meaning clear. Top Gun didn't hesitate.
"Sure," he said.
29. The two mindless were as bare around the lower jaw as if they had shaven with a straight razor before they died. None of the characteristic skin tags that identified zombies were present. After a thorough inspection, Collie met Gus's quizzical expression. Collie even reached down and stretched the cheeks of both, one way and then the other, to ensure they weren't missing anything.
"The fuck does it mean?" Gus wanted to know.
Collie met his pleading eyes.
"No clue."
"Are they zombies?"
"I'm pretty sure they're zombies."
"But they can die just by being shot in the body. Doesn't have to be the head."
Collie lifted her head as if shifting into a higher gear of thought.
"We don't know that. You shot only one and it died. To prove that, we'd have to shoot more of them, and not in the head."
The revving of engines distracted them both. Collie switched off the flashlight. Gus crawled to his perch and checked on the pack of psychos. Collie did the same from the other side. Exhaust billowed in the light and shadow. The pickups were pulling back, but not far. The two nearest trucks drew back about 30 feet, just clear of the corpses littering the pavement. The rest of the vehicles retreated farther back toward the tunnel entrance.
"What are they doing?" Gus asked anxiously.
Collie didn't answer right away.
"Something," she finally let out. "Keep your head down, and if you peek, don't pop up in the same place twice."
"Right."
Gus listened to the rigs moving behind the rubble.
"How long would it take for them to get to that box thingy you were talking about?" he asked.
Collie thought about it.
"Given that they're tired, running on empty, I'd say close to 10 minutes. If they start to lag, tack on 5 more. Give or take another 5 to get inside, if they can get inside, but I'm certain they can. Then another 5 minutes to locate the EVs and fire them up."
"What if they're dead?"
"They're not dead. This whole place draws power from its own grid. Geothermal, man. If there's no activity in the base, it's programmed to go into sleep mode. Those rigs would still get a charge, except..."
Collie faltered.
"Except what?"
"Battery life."
"Battery life?"
"Yeah. I'm not sure exactly how long the batteries in those rigs can keep functioning before burning out."
Gus lowered his chin onto his chest.
"But if they are good," she resumed, "then they can hit 60 clicks an hour. Someone would be back here in a minute for us."
"Okay, so how long have we been here?"
"Since they left, maybe 25.
"Maybe?"
"Maybe 20.
Gus wasn't sure himself. He juggled balls that weren't there.
"So they should be back soon, right?"
"Maybe."
He considered the long, dark tunnel leading to Whitecap, waiting for headlights to appear.
"The fuck's keeping them, then?"
"They'll be back. Question is if we'll be alive when they get here."
Commotion from the leather-clad freaks drew Gus's attention, so he crawled back to his perch, careful to get behind a different cluster of debris. The crazies were still moving things around.
They're up to something, he said.
My guess? Collie began. They're pulling back from where I shot that piss back.
Yeah, that was a good shot. That's your tax dollars working right there. Nice to know I'm getting something back.
Honey, you got the best.
What do you think they're doing? Gus asked, not knowing if he would like the answer. Collie thought about it.
Those two rigs are serving as a blinder to block our line of sight. This pile of shit we're hiding behind. I'm guessing that the armored truck was here, and when the backhoe rooted it free, the ceiling fell in.
Part of it. Enough to unfuck the passage for Whitecap's undead personnel to march up and over it.
I'm guessing those leather fuckheads will want to open it up a little more. Maybe pull back that backhoe, then the truck, then try another rush.
But we're still here.
Yeah, and we rodeo fucked them the last time. Chances are we won't get them like that again.
Collie smiled at him.
But that doesn't mean we'll stop trying.
30. There were only two rounds left in the AUG-20. Top Gun figured someone had a grand old time popping off a few shots at road signs or some similar shit before realizing the ammunition was a finite resource. Still, he loaded the remaining bullets by forefinger and thumb into the magazine. If he'd had a full mag, he would have popped off as many leather dickheads as he could before trying to escape. As it was, he really couldn't do a damn thing. Not with four of the insane fuckwits hanging right off his ass. They weren't literally hanging off his ass, but they were close enough that if he tried anything besides shooting the shitbags holding up the rifle, they would smash the living pudding out of him. He was roughly five truck lengths behind the lead pickups, the same vehicles that had their headlights punched out by Full Metal Jackets. He perched the AUG-20 across one corner of the box bed with a clear line of sight at that hole in the rubble. The truck was stable enough for a shot, but with only two rounds, he'd have to be point-on accurate. The bronze was standing right behind him, like some dusted-off drill master from a 1970s terror squad. The bronze gripped the hammer in his right hand, well within striking range of Top Gun's skull. Considering all the horrible fates the leather could inflict upon him, Top Gun figured if he did get his head bashed in, he'd be lucky. He also figured he just didn't have that kind of luck. Regardless, his son-of-a-bitch chuggernaut of a captor had given him a job to do. One job. And incidentally, one he could do with a fair chance of success. Shooting a target in a dark tunnel less than a hockey rink away through a mess of concrete and fallen rock and shit? That Top Gun could do. There was nowhere to extend the bipod on the AUG-20, so he simply shouldered the weapon, placed it across the box of the truck, stared down the scope, and let the reticle do the walking. The single green dot crept over a broken hedge of rubble, swept slowly from left to right. Top Gun focused on his breathing, searching for any telltale sign of life just over that pile of debris. The vulture said there should only be two shooters back there, and that was fine. All Top Gun needed was a glimpse of hair, the top of a head, part of a face. Given any of that, he could make the shot a kilometer out. This close, however, he could do laser surgery.
I'm ready, he said in a low tone.
Several trucks were parked in the tunnel, all of them drawn to one side, where the backhoe and armored truck provided some measure of protection from gunfire. One of the leather's trucks was backing up very slowly, guided by a half dozen lessers, and maybe even a functioning camera or two. There were no warning beeps as the rig backed up, no warning lights. The rear doors were chained. The vulture had explained the plan to Top Gun. Shoot anyone he could see. But Top Gun knew that crooked cocknose had something else planned. A contingency plan in case the rodents holding up the show refused to lift their faces for the camera. That plan involved those god-awful bladders, and the mindless they packed away in a 20-wheel transport trailer. A small unit of leather formed up just behind Top Gun, the surviving leftovers of that initial charge. One of them carried two of those sickening bladders hanging from his hands like a pair of glistening sausages. Top Gun noticed that the grunt had no boots on. In fact, the grunt crouched low, almost invisible in the dark, as he disappeared underneath the backhoe. Top Gun flexed his fingers before gently caressing the curve of the AUG-20's feather trigger.
31.
You hear something? Gus whispered.
No,
Collie whispered back. He hesitated, his ears perked like satellite dishes, but could not discern anything outside of the low growl of motors. However, something had drawn his attention. He lifted his head, just enough to peek over the rubble. Collie watched him, not exactly at ease by what he was doing. Nothing moved among the freshly killed carrion littering the slope and beyond. Past the armored truck and backhoe, the leather's trucks were still in place, but Gus could see dark heads weaving about. The thought of sending a bullet or two in their direction might buy them a little more time. He was just about to suggest that very thing when the lightest flutter from somewhere in front of him got his attention. Gus drew back in reflex, not quite understanding what he was looking at in the dark, when the piss bag exploded right across his face. 32. Top Gun had a shot. Matter of fact, he had a great shot of a set of narrowed eyes and a hairless head that resembled the ass end of an egg. The shot was even improving, and Top Gun waited for just a little more face before he put a shell right between those squinty eyes. His finger tensed on the trigger when the target's face was suddenly blotted out. Top Gun looked up from the scope in confusion before quickly taking up aim once again. And just off center of the reticle, just to the left of the killer dot, a full torso came into view. A black bag whipped across Gus's face and exploded with all the pus-filled energy of an oversized pimple caught between two fingernails. He staggered back, clawing the thing from his face as a stomach-curdling stink filled the air. A few droplets hit Collie, and she instantly realized what had happened. As Gus staggered backwards, she rose and rushed across the empty space, exposing herself from the sternum up. The stink was stunning, a putrid, gaseous nebula that was borderline debilitating. She pushed through that toxic haze and grabbed Gus by his shoulder, yanking him down and out of sight. They landed hard, with him sputtering and spitting.
"In my mouth," he grunted, groaned, and scrubbed his bare hands over his face.
Collie tried pulling them away, but he resisted.
"Even my eyes."
"Use your sleeves," Collie told him, glancing in the direction of their pursuers, seeing none.
Gus used his right sleeve, let out a frustrated "fuck," before switching to his left. That seemed to work better.
"Right across the chops," Collie said.
"Yeah,"
Gus confirmed through clenched teeth. In truth, he had taken the piss bag clear across the face, where the ends of the thing had clapped his ears a split second before its shifting, warping mass burst upon contact. His scalp and face dripped. His beard and neckline were soaked. The sensation was horrible. His face burned and crawled as if maggots were feasting upon his skin.
"Oh, you stink," Collie hissed.
He nodded, eyes squeezed shut as if permanently blinded. He blinked hard and attempted to focus. Collie returned to the mound. She took a breath and rose on one knee, letting loose a barrage of pistol fire, lighting up the dark. She then briefly checked to see if anyone was coming and then hurried back to Gus. "Can you run?" she asked.
"Yeah.
Come on then.
Bruno and Corey are back."
But Collie didn't answer. She hefted him to his feet and, glancing over her shoulder, pulled him toward her.
"Everything's blurry," Gus muttered, pawing at his face.
"I know.
Can't see shit."
They ran, an off-balanced gait that didn't improve. Collie looked over her shoulder. No pursuers. Yet.
"We could have held them back," Gus cringed.
"Not with you like this.
Face feels like there's shit growing out of it."
Collie chose not to comment as she glanced back toward the tunnel entrance again.
"Wait," Gus said. "Look."
Collie turned her attention back to the access tunnel that led deeper into Whitecap and saw the growing glare of headlights. 33. The egg-shaped head was out of sight before Top Gun could take a bead on it, and at least two of his sphincters clenched at the missed opportunity. He remained in position, waiting for the target to reappear. It did. About 10 seconds later, 2 feet from the initial spot, and it cut loose with gunfire.
Great booming shots of fire shrieked past Top Gun, forcing the leather around him to duck for cover. A few rounds smacked into hoods and windshields while others ricocheted off concrete. Then nothing. Top Gun hunkered down behind the tailgate. A hand touched his shoulder. The bronze. The forbidding executioner was hunched over like the rest of them. It turned its masked features toward Top Gun, close enough this time that he saw the gleam of cold black within the eye slits. Unsure of what to do, Top Gun blinked, waited for the commotion around him to settle down, and wisely kept his mouth shut. Footsteps then, a dull pounding of soles on pavement and other organic matter. The bronze looked away from Top Gun. The leather who had thrown the bladder was pointing frantically towards the tunnel opening.
"They're running," he exclaimed.
A second later, dozens of the leather broke into a run. They rushed by the bronze who was receiving orders from the vulture. Upon finishing, the vulture hurried to the forefront. The bronze and the other three leather guarding Top Gun pulled the man up by his arms and hauled him forward by his throat leash. As a unit, they hurried after the others. The vulture had arrived at the mouth and was overseeing his leather-clad minions as they climbed up the slope and peered into the dark beyond. Faint at first, the vulture recognized a set of headlights approaching from within the tunnel, partially obscured by the silhouettes of two fleeing figures. The vulture motioned for Top Gun. The lessers brought him forward and dumped him onto the edge of the concrete slabs. The vulture pointed toward the two escaping shadows. "Stop them," he ordered in a strained voice. Top Gun set up his rifle. 34. Almost 100 meters out, Collie and Gus stopped running, and Corey pulled up alongside in what appeared to be a huge golf cart without the overhead canopy.
"You guys okay?" he asked, his face concerned.
He looked at Gus and immediately crinkled his nose.
"Jesus, you shit yourself or something?"
"Yeah," Gus replied, still attempting to clear his eyes. "Or something." Collie pushed Gus towards the back of the vehicle. The cart's doors were only waist high, leaving the EV very open, much like a convertible. Polished railing ringed the passenger seats. Collie upended Gus into the back seat where he tumbled hard to the floor. Collie grabbed his ankles and shoved his legs clear.
"They coming?" Corey asked.
"Probably." She climbed into the rear, perching herself in the tiny cargo hold in the rear. "All right," she said, grabbing the railing. "I'm in. Go." Top Gun saw the figures clamber into the little buggy. He saw one upend another, heaving the unlucky bastard into the back seat. A set of boots stuck up in the air. Those he ignored, choosing to track the vehicle's turn and focusing on the first target acquired. Top Gun ignored the leather standing around him. He guided the green reticle over his target and kept it there. He hissed softly, releasing his breath, and fired. Hunching over the steering wheel, Corey turned the rig around. He put his foot down on the accelerator just as a metallic scream buzzed by him and a bullet hole as fine as a spider's web punctured the EV's windshield on the passenger side. From where he was, splayed out on the EV's floor, a blurry-eyed Gus watched as Collie landed in a crouch in the rear trunk area. She leaned forward as if gripping a rail, when her back exploded in a startling burst of black matter. A warm wetness spattered Gus's face and hands. There was no warning, just a lethal combination of speed brought on by Corey stomping on the pedal and forward inertia. Then she was gone, tumbling forward, out of the cart, and onto the hard pavement. With a pain-filled squawk, Gus hauled himself up as Corey swerved right and left, trying to make the EV as hard a target as possible. The rocking slammed Gus into the seats and floor, battering him before he finally got to his knees. He pulled himself up and immediately looked back. Speeding away from them was the ghostly eye of the distant tunnel entrance. Collie was nowhere in sight.
"Cah,"
he huffed, his voice cracking and his eyes watering. He blinked hard, pawed at what was left over, and hunkered down, gripping onto the railing. No Collie. Not a trace. But there was plenty of her blood sprayed across the trunk, and her Sig Sauer right in the middle of it all.
"She's gone?" Corey yelled out.
But Gus didn't answer him, transfixed by that terrible void and the glaring light near the end of it all. All the while, the EV sped down the throat of Whitecap. 35. A short time later, shadows crowded around the dead soldier. The leather assumed she was a soldier by her uniform just as easily as they saw she was dead by the baseball-sized hole through her chest. One of the leather stooped and flipped the dead woman over, allowing the vulture to step in and inspect the kill. Shock filled the soldier's staring eyes as blood dribbled from that grisly crater, airing out the right side of her ribcage. A mild trace of scent hung about her carcass. The vulture frowned. "Get her out of the way," he rumbled with venom, in case the mindless would be distracted by her. That would not do. That would be a waste of time. Flicking fingers to get the lesser moving, the vulture turned and stared down the tunnel. Several of his minions flanked him, stretched across a clear 3-lane strip of pavement. He peered into the dark, where the fleeing vehicle had escaped, a vehicle that was practically soundless. Without a word, he strode back towards the light, where his minions were already preparing to reanimate the backhoe. In his wake, two of the leather dragged the dead soldier off the path by her ankles. They quickly hauled her over to a gutter, which separated the wall from the